I do not believe that that was the front door of a house. I believe that door is a door on the inside of you. It's a door which would link the Christ of God, who is in every person, with the area of the house in which you are living your life. So here he is, he's on the inside, but there's a closed door between you and God. This is the picture, I believe, for many, many people today. It's a closed door. If you want an interesting study, you can go through the Bible, because there are many closed doors and there are many open doors. And it's an interesting little study to go through and find them. A concordance will show you all the references. But this is a man, this is somebody, not necessarily a man, but somebody in which Christ is seeking to gain access to the life of this person in whom he is living. Did you know and understand that there are people today who have Christ dwelling within them, but they have never been conscious of that? And I'm not just talking about, you know, people out in the world, as we say, and the drunkards and all of that. I'm talking about Christians. Many Christians have no concept that God actually dwells in them. So many Christians are still talking to a God that's up there in the sky. But see, he's right there. And if we will open that door and allow him access to our life. Now, we're not looking in this verse, we are not looking at salvation, you know, because this is how it's always preached, isn't it? You know, Jesus Christ wants to come in. Come on. You ask him to come into your heart tonight, believe that he died for you on the cross, and you'll be born again as a child of God and you go to heaven. See, that's how it's presented, but I want you to understand tonight, for all of us here, have you really opened that door that the Christ that dwells in you has access into the life that you are living? Is he there providing you with the knowledge that you need, providing you with the wisdom that you need? I mean, we're living in very, very dangerous times, when all kinds of things can happen to a person. And who has the answers to all those things? Only Christ. He knows everything about everything. And the interesting thing is, what does he want to do when you allow him to come into your life and to share that life with you? You see, this is what God is all about. But when the gospel is preached to many people throughout the churches today, give your heart to Jesus, believe he died for you, and then ask him to come into your heart, believe he died for you on the cross, now you're born again, you're going to go to heaven. What does that do for a person? Nothing. Because it's not scriptural, it's not seeing the reality of who a person is and what God really wants to do. Jesus Christ is not wanting simply to come into your life so you can be born again and go to heaven when you die. That is not the purpose here. Because are you hearing what he says? It says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man will open that door, allow me access into his life, what is he going to do? He's going to sit with us. He's going to allow your life and his to intertwine. He's going to sup with us. Well, now we've had a lot of supping here in this home since I've been here. We sit around that table and we're all supping, a little sup, whatever that is. And, you know, it's wonderful. But see, we are sharing with each other. And what are we sharing? The only time you can share with other people is when you have been sharing with the Lord. If I have not been sharing with the Lord in my life, I would not have anything to share with you. You see? So this is an important thing. God is wanting to share your life. That's what I'm trying to get over to you. He's not wanting just for you to acknowledge that he's there. Of course, you say, well, I say, you know Christ is in you. You say, yes, of course I do. But now let's go a bit further. Have you ever opened the door into the actual function of your life? And when you open that door, he's going to come in there and he's going to give you the benefit of his wisdom. You see, I have decisions to make in my life. And, you know, what am I going to do? When I came to the United States, I had to make up my mind, where would I go and where would I not go? And I said, Lord, that's why I want you to tell me. Where should I be going? So we had another little sup together, you see, when he was able to share with me some of the places and some of the experiences that he told me I would be having. And so that's very important. But not just in the terms of me and ministry. I'm talking about life generally. Even when I'm at home, I'm supping with the Lord. He comes in and he's part of my life. We live together. And this is a combination. Now, it's not me praying to a God up there, asking him to help me to do what I'm supposed to be doing. No. This is God with his hands right in the business. I mean, he's in there. This is the control room of my life. This is where I function from. This is actually the heart of man. I'm not talking about the pump that pumps the blood around my body. I'm talking about the heart of man, which is the center of my being, out of which my whole life flows. What I will do and how I will do it, and what I will say and how I will say it, all flows out of that center, that heart, which is within me. That's what the Bible calls it, the heart of man. This is the center of our being. And I believe that's the door that Jesus Christ is standing at tonight. And many, many Christians have never known what it is to take God into their confidence. And that instead of sitting there, you know, crying into your cornflakes in the morning, you are having an intimate experience with the Christ of God. Because you've opened the door, you've allowed him in, and now it's not just I, me, and mine. It's us. It's me, oh God, and me. We're walking together, becoming one in practical experience, because the more he spends his time guiding me in my life, the more he shows me how to live, how to handle situations, the more he gives me wisdom with my children, with my grandchildren, and bless God, with my great-grandchildren. They're the greatest problem of all. I mean, you know, these are my grandchildren that are now grown up. And I wonder, I think at about 10, some of them stopped growing up. And now they've got children, for goodness sake. And you know what that means? That's children raising children. Mm-hmm. And they have a ball. Yeah, but they want somebody else to come and relieve them every once in a while to give them a break. Well, so this is the Christian life. The Christian life is not just trusting in Jesus, praying to God, asking him for his help, and all of these things. The Christian life is you and God sitting down at a table, discussing how life is going to be lived, discussing what you are going to do, how you are going to do it, and if there's any issues, you have to just put it out there on the table and he'll give you the answers. So you see, that's a different concept of the Christian life. And these are the things that we need to understand. Now, I would never understand this unless God had showed me. Because the picture of Jesus Christ standing outside a house, here's the front door, and he's knocking to get in. I said, that doesn't make any sense. He's not out there. He's in here. You see? So obviously that picture is not accurate to what God is trying to teach us here. If you allow him in, he said, we will sit together. He's not coming to you to judge you on what you are doing. He's not coming there to tell you you've done it all wrong and please stop and let me try and do something instead for you. No, he's not. He says he's coming in to sup with us. That means to have a cup of coffee together. You understand that? That's in literal language I'm talking about now. That's what it means. It means to have a cup of tea together. It means to sit down without any preconceived ideas of what we're going to talk about, and just suddenly, the thing that we need to know, he's telling me. We're just sitting at a table. We're just enjoying each other's company. But in the process, he is giving me the wisdom of the Almighty. And I can begin to live my life. And tomorrow, he'll be there again. And the next day, he'll be there again. And look, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter where you are. Whether you're in the middle of a fix, you know, and everything's gone wrong and you're wondering what's going to happen, he'll be there and you can sit at that table and be at peace. Why? Because the God of all the earth is there with you. The wisdom of God has come to have tea with you. Amen. The Christ of God with all of his understanding is right there and says, you and I, we're one. He's not a visitor. He's part of you. He's a part of you. So this is the concept, and I want you to take that with you and make it work for you, because this is how it was meant to be. It says, we will come to him. I will come into him and sup with him and he with me. In other words, it's not just a one-sided conversation where he's going to give you a lecture, but you're going to express some things to him, and he's going to express some things to you. And in that conversation of the two together, the wisdom of God is going to flow from the mighty Christ within you and begin to function through your life. And people will wonder, how could you do this? How can you handle this? When a woman gets a telephone call, I'm sorry, Mrs. So-and-so, but your husband has just been pulled from a wreck and he's gone. We're so sorry. That's when you need to have an open door in here. Not a closed door, where you are going to shut off the wisdom of the universe at the very moment when you need it the most. You need an open door. So, it says here, to him that overcomes. Well, if you want to overcome, here is the secret. What are you going to do? To overcome, you need to have morning tea with the Christ. You need to sit together and sup with him, and he's going to sup with you. And then you will learn the secret of overcoming. Coming over, if you like. But this is the experience that he wants you to have. You see, he said, don't be too concerned about the world, because I have overcome the world. Well, if he's already overcome the world and he's living in me, I want to tell you, that's the one I want to have in my life. Not just dwelling in me in the quarters, you know, but the door between is shut. No. I want to open that door. In fact, I'm going to take the screws out of the hinges and I'm going to take the door off so that it can never close again, because I could not live without the Christ in me. I would never have the knowledge that God has given to me. I got it over the table having coffee with him. It's as simple as that. I'm trying to make it simple for you. And I'm trying to bring it home to you as practically as possible. That's what it is. This is him. He said, now to him that overcomes. That means if you have really an open door on the inside here, and the Christ of God is not ensconced in the back room of your house, which is you. And I think that's where, for Christians, many Christians, he's in the back room. Now, Lord, you know, I don't mind you being there. You can do whatever you like there. I mean, you know, I'm not putting any restriction on you whatsoever. But, you know, the rest of the house is out of bounds. You know that? You just do whatever you like there, back in that back room, whatever you've got there. But that's it. And I want to tell you, that is how many Christians are living today. Probably more than you would imagine. But there was never an open door inside here whereby he could come in and have a cup of coffee with you and to encourage us and to bring the wisdom of the universe to us. To him that overcomes. That's how you're going to overcome. Well, what does he say? To the one that overcomes, listen to this. He says, I will grant for that person to sit with me, to sit with the Christ of God in my throne. Did you know it was a two-seater? It's a two-seater. He said, to the one that will overcome, I will grant to him to sit with me in my throne, ruling the world. Oh God. Not to help him, of course, he doesn't need any help, just to be there. Just to be there and see all those peewees there, you know, the guys that used to make fun of you, you know, because you were a Christian, and just to see how God handled it all and brought those people to their knees so that they wanted him and he would touch them and lift them up also. All right, so he said, I grant to them to sit in my throne, and even as I overcame and am set down in my Father's throne, you will rule and reign with me. We will rule and reign with him. Beloved, this is the process of the Christian life. This is how it's to function. And of course, Jesus said, don't be afraid of the world, because I have overcome the world. I've overcome it. Therefore, if you want to overcome it, and that's what we're all trying to do, we're trying to overcome the world. He said, I've already done it. Well, I'm telling you, If you want to do something and somebody else has already done it and made a success of it, you better listen to what they've got to say. So the Christ of God, he's already overcome the world. That's the one I need beside me while I'm going through it, because he's going to guide me, he's going to direct my footsteps. But not only that, he's going to grant me to sit with him. And that's why Isaiah, when he saw the Lord, he saw him on the throne in here. He was on the throne. Did you know that the throne of God is not up in the sky? That the throne of God is in a people. Lord, help us here tonight. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches, the people of God. After this, John says, after this, I looked, and he said, behold, there was a door open in heaven. Now he's really going to tell us how this whole thing worked. He said, I saw this thing just open up in front of me, and there was a door that opened into the spirit world. This is the world that you were created for. This is the world that spirit dwells in. This is the world that is totally unknown to those who do not know that they are spirit, and that spirit is Christ. If you're not spirit, then you can't understand, you will not see that world, you will not understand anything in that world. There's a door. Isn't this wonderful?
Yes.
That God has provided a door into that world for us. This is an amazing thing. Can we just walk into that other world? No. It's not possible. If we want to enter into that world, somebody's got to make a way for us to get in there. How are you going to walk into the world of spirit apart from coming to the end of your life and allowing death to possess your body? That'll take you into the other world. But how are we going to do that now without having to pass on into the next life from here? You can only do that through Christ. You can only do that through Christ. There's only one door. And Jesus Christ said, I am that door. He is the door. Why? Because he is spirit. Therefore, he's a part of the spirit world. But he was also born of a woman. So he's also the Son of Man. So you see, he's got his foot in both camps. Or perhaps that's not quite the right way to say that, but see, he's part of both worlds. And therefore, he is the only one that can give you access into that other world. It's through Christ. He is spirit, therefore he has access into the spirit world. Beloved, I don't know whether you have done much thinking about this, but I want to tell you, until we understand the spirit world, we're not really going to understand God, because that's his world. God is really not a part of this world in which we live. You can't find him here anywhere. You can only find him within the man, within the person, because he is spirit, and everything else around us is material, it's physical. It's made of some physical material that you can touch, you can see it, you can feel it, and all of these other things. But the spirit world is unknown. And There is no access to it for us, but through Christ. He's the door. So he's the door here in John, in Revelation 4, verse 1. There was a door open in heaven, and the first verse that voice that I heard was, as it were, a trumpet talking with me. The words of Christ are often referred to as a trumpet playing. Why? Because you cannot play two notes together on a trumpet. You can only play one note at a time. On a piano, you can play as many as your fingers can cope with. All at once, you can play all those notes together. But a trumpet, only one note, that's all. So it's a clear sound. It's a clear sound. And that is a type, if you like, of the voice of God. It's a clear sound. You cannot mistake it. So he said it was like a trumpet talking with me. And what did the voice say? Come up hither. Not go down. Not just step over here. Come on up. There is an elevation that God is going to bring into your life when you're ready to step into that other world and see what God has prepared for those that love him. You do not have to die to see that. There is an access, there is a door into that other world, and that door is Christ. So we've been looking at one door. One door is the door that's within you that allows the Christ to become part of your life, your living, your experience, to become a part of all that is affecting you. He's a part, he becomes part of it. And the wisdom of God, he shares with us. Beloved, how many times have I had experiences in my life and I was out of my depth? I didn't understand. I didn't really know what to do. At that time, I'd never opened the door. There was Christ. I knew he was in me. I would have declared that to anybody. Yeah, Christ is in me. But that Christ was not a part of my daily living. There's a big difference between those two things. Christ dwelling in you? Yes, no problem. Christ dwelling in you, becoming a part of the parliament, of the government, part of the authority that functions through you in your life. That's the Christian life. Now we're talking some real reality. This is true reality. So he says, come on up, come on up. So he's got to lift us up. Why? Because that world of the Spirit is not down there. It's elevated. It's above this world in which we live. It's above. That's why heaven simply means above. You know, that's what it means. It doesn't mean, you know, it's a wonderful place with golden streets and all of that. The word heaven simply means it's above. It's over. And that's why the heavens rule in the affairs of men. So that that divine wisdom and authority is an elevated authority. Come on up. And what's he said? And immediately, verse 2. And immediately I was in the Spirit. You understand this? Do you know what it is to be in the Spirit? Of course, we have the Spirit because Christ is Spirit. We have the Spirit. But to be in the Spirit, that's a different thing. What does it mean to be in the Spirit? It means that we are energized by the Spirit. That means that we can speak out of what the Spirit is saying. it means that we can express what the Spirit is doing. It's a new experience. This is the Christian life. Tonight, this is a very simple lesson, isn't it? It's almost like we've gone back to kindergarten. But how profound is it? Because, you see, this is the real issues of life. That Christ has to become an integral part of what you call your life. There's nobody solo in this thing. If you are, I'm telling you, you're going to find yourself many times out of your depth, and you will not know what the answers are until you unlock that door and let Him in to live life with you. And He says, if you'll do that, then you will overcome this world. Why? Because He's already overcome the world, therefore He's got all the answers. He can tell you exactly what to do in any given situation. I mean, if you've been rejected of men, I know lots of people suffer from rejection. They suffer from rejection from their parents sometimes because of divorce and all kinds of other things. They suffer rejection because at school they weren't quite as bright as some of the other children, and some crazy school teacher would make fun of you. Hey, I know what I'm talking about. You see, all of these kinds of things, we suffer from rejection. And how are we going to overcome that? You're never going to overcome that unless you let somebody come in there who has no rejection in his life. And yet, he was despised and rejected of men. He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. We couldn't look upon him upon that cross. Here he was, naked, hanging there upon that cross. And we despised him and we walked away. Oh, Lord, he knew what rejection was. But now he's seated at the right hand of the Father. And when I let him into my life, I'm telling you, my rejection disappeared. Because I knew who I was. And because he'd become a part of me, and I become a part of him. It was Christ and me, and yet it was only Christ, because when I looked, I couldn't even see another shadow. There was only one there. It was Christ in me, functioning together as one. That's the truth. So, he says here, immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, there was a throne. What does a throne mean? The throne means a place of authority. This is where authority is born. This is where authority is meted out to whoever needs that authority. It's from the throne. The Queen of England, she basically sits upon the throne. She has power, quite a lot of power in some fields. She does not control the Parliament. That's functions quite independently of her. But in some other things, I mean, she can tell her children and her grandchildren if they can get married or not, and all these other things. That she is on the throne. I'm only using that as an illustration because the higher thought is that Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord over all the lords of this earth, dwells in you, but now he's sitting at the table with you. We're having coffee together. We're just supping with one another. We're fellowshipping together. I'm just so thrilled to have such a person that would eat and drink with me. Oh, Lord, help us. You say, well, I've never had lunch with the King. I've never had lunch with the Queen. But I want to tell you, I've had many meals with the Christ of God, the King of all the earth. I have spent many hours with him, many hours. So this is the Christian life. He said there was a throne that was set in heaven, and there was one that sat upon that throne. So if he's sitting on that throne, then he's the one in charge. He is the one who, when he speaks, the world has to listen, because he is the ruler. He is the king over all the kings. And he has elevated you. He's lifting you up. We have moved now from the little table where we have our coffee. We've moved now, we've gone up onto a higher level, and now we've come to the throne room. And out of that room, God controls the universe, and we sit with him. We sit with him. There is no rejection here. And we find ourselves totally equal. And not just equal, but we are part of the crown. We're part of the authority of that throne. We're part of Christ. We are the Christ today on this earth, because he dwells in us. The doors open, and he and I become one. You become one with him. And the throne of God becomes a part of our experience. Beloved, we should never, ever make a mistake in our thoughts or our thinking. We should never make a mistake in knowing what to do in our lives, for we share the throne with him. The authority flows from him through the open door into that room in which you and the Christ function, living together, enjoying each other's company, and from that place to the throne where we rule and reign with him. Can you understand this? This is the Christian life. And all they ever told me when I went to Sunday school was, give your heart to Jesus, believe he died for you, and ask him into your heart, and you'll go to heaven when you die. I want to tell you, that didn't take me far. And even as a teenager, before I even got out of my teens, I knew that the church had no answers for me. No answers for me. I had to find my answers in Christ. And it took me nearly 40 years of my life before I really found the reality that I can share with you tonight. It was then that door on the inside here opened. I opened it because I discovered that the one that had been in there, locked in there basically, was the Christ of God, and I had never talked to him. He had never talked to me. I had never heard the voice of God. Not ever in my life had I heard the voice of God. And I hadn't met anybody else that had heard the voice of God. In fact, many of my friends said, oh, Des, that's not a reality, you know. It's just, you know, you hear the voice of God, that means that you know God. Oh, so it's got to be better than that. I mean, if I hear somebody's voice, I'm going to hear something that they've got to say, and what they say is going to make some kind of sense to me. And that's what he is, the Christ of God. I heard the trumpet. I heard the sound. And I want to tell you, my life was never the same from that day. And you know what he told me that day? This is the first time I ever heard the voice of God. I've been walking along by myself somewhere. I don't remember where it was. And as I'm walking along, there's nobody with me, just me. I'm talking to the Lord. I did a lot of talking to the Lord, but he never talked to me. Well, that was only because, you know, I had the microphone on, but the ear piece was all turned off. I didn't understand that, see. I had to turn it on before I could hear his voice. It was always there. And I was telling him, you know, Lord, I've done some bad things. Oh, I haven't killed anybody, or, you know. But I've done some bad things. And, Lord, you know, I think that you don't like sin, and you're really up against sin. You know, you don't want us to be involved in sin at all. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. In honesty, because I know that I have offended you, I've done things that have not been according to your word and will. So I'm going to give you permission to destroy me. I said, you can send a bus down the road to run over me. You can do whatever you like. Give me a heart attack. I don't care. But I'm giving you permission. I mean, this is crazy, isn't it? Are you listening to this? I'm telling you the truth. I'm talking to God and giving him permission to do something to me. Well, anyway, you know, God takes us where we're at. He takes us where we're at. That's where I was at. I never heard a word, like I never heard any answer from God. And I remember just keeping on walking, got to where I was going. Forgot about it all. But it was probably 3 or maybe even 4 weeks later when again I was walking. This is a teenage boy. And I suddenly remembered my conversation that I had with God. And I kind of just stopped for a minute and I said, wait a minute, I'm still here. God, I told you that I'd given you authority. You could take my life because that's all I deserve. But you didn't do it. Oh, God, I said, you must love me. That's the only conclusion I can come to. Otherwise, you would have done whatever. You must love me. And if ever I was staggered, it was at that time because I heard a voice in here. Said, son, I've always loved you. And all of my rejection from the early part of my life disappeared. Somebody really loved me. I knew my mother loved me. I wasn't sure if my father loved me, but then I didn't understand him, and I didn't know enough about him. And so I only judged him according to a boy's concept and understanding. I didn't know that he'd been in the war. I didn't know that he was in France and had been gassed and seen some horrible things that had just messed up his brain in that area, you know. I didn't know any of that till I was an adult. He never ever spoke about it at all. But I heard a voice. And the first thing that voice said to me was, I've always loved you. And from that day, I have continued to hear that voice. Not very much in those early days, because I didn't expect him to, you know, I mean, who am I? God's not going to go chatter, 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 you know. No, he doesn't do that. But there were just odd times when I would hear that voice and there would be something, I would be directed into the book. And I would begin to see something I had never seen in my life before. At the age of 40, that's when this really took hold on me. And after I had stopped ministering, you know, as a pastor and so on, and I didn't go to church and I didn't even read the Bible, and I wasn't angry with God or anything, but I didn't know what to do. I honestly didn't know what to do because I'd studied the Bible before. And, you know, so when I heard this voice, it began to grow in me little by little during those years, even when I was ministering. Never heard the voice very much, only on odd occasions. That wasn't God's fault, it was mine. I wasn't really listening. I didn't expect God to go chatter, 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 you know. I didn't expect him to stand there and talk to me. Who am I? I'm nobody. I was still, you know, that's rejection again, of course. So, but when I realized, you know, when I stepped out of the church, when I stepped out of the limelight of ministry and everything else, and I'm just, it's just me, me and God, I began to hear that voice every day. And whenever I opened this book, I would say, Father, I've read this book 100 times. I've read this. I don't think there's any doctrine in this book that I have not studied. I don't think there's any great knowledge in this book that I've not thought about and understand to a degree. But Father, I want you to begin to teach me, because I'm not going to listen to what men have to say at all. I'm not going to listen to theologians or whatever. Father, I want to hear what you are going to tell me about this book. And I got a new Bible. Oh, it's the same one, the same book, but brand new. You see? And so what you're hearing tonight is just part of the new book, that's all. It's all there. You've read it. You've read this passage many, many times, I'm sure. But you just glossed over it. Why? Because you didn't hear a voice. You see, and this is our problem. We read the Bible and think, oh yeah, I understand English, so I understand those words, and I can tell you exactly what it means. But see, I didn't know that this word contained an essence of life, contained the essence of life, and I had never touched that essence before. So he said, and he that was that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. Oh, there's a lot to do there. There's a lot of colours and what have you. I'm not going to go into that, because this is not the thought of what I want to share with you tonight. It says in verse 4, round about the throne were 24 seats, and upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white garments, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. 24. 12 tribes of Israel and 12 disciples. Or is it the people of God? It was the 12 is the number, you know, that was the divine number that God chose. So it represents the chosen people of God, not just the disciples, because to be honest with you, those disciples didn't learn very much. I mean, when the crucifixion was over, they went back fishing and whatever else they were doing. That's how much they learned from him. And two of those disciples, walking on the way to Emmaus, Jesus actually joined them, and they didn't even know who he was. Oh, Lord. So, and it says here, these 24 were clothed in raiments and had crowns of gold. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunderings and voices, and there were 7 lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the 7 spirits of God. I'm not preaching on the seven spirits of God tonight, but you can go through that for yourself. You'll find in Isaiah that he'll enumerate some of those for you. But I'm going to show you something else. This is what I want you to see. It's verse 6. It says, and before the throne, that's in front of the throne, there was a sea of glass. A sea of glass, like unto crystal. And in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were four beasts full of eyes before the Lord, before and behind. And before the throne there was a sea of glass as clear as crystal. What is the sea of glass? Well, let me ask you another question. How do you make glass? Well, it's very simple. You get the sand of the seashore and you heat it very, very hot, and it begins to turn into a liquid. And then you do certain things with it, add maybe certain things to bring clarity to it, make it like crystal, but it's glass. What does the sea of glass represent? And it's before the throne, where we are looking directly into the face of the King. What does it represent? If you looked into that glass, what would you see? Nothing. Only your reflection. That's all. So what does it represent? It represents the saints of God. This is us, beloved, before the throne of God as a sea of glass, a sea of glass, as clear as crystal. What does this mean? Could you pick out your little piece of sand in that sea? Could you pick out your little piece of sand, your little bit of sand? No. Why? Because we have been fused together to become transparent as crystal before the throne of Almighty God. We stand as one. Person. Oh God, isn't he wonderful? Isn't he wonderful? What have we done to deserve that? What have we done to find our place in him, seated or in that sea of glass before the throne of God? Simply, he's looking at us and we are looking at him. All he sees is one. All he sees is one. And all we see is one. That is the Christ of God. This is the Christian life. Tonight, I've shared this with you simply so that you might hide it in your heart and that you might discover whether you have ever opened that door, whether you've ever begun a life in total communion with him. And if you thought you weren't good enough for God to do that for you, you're wrong. You're wrong. If any man, did you hear it? Any man, I don't care who it is, will open that door. He said, I'll come in. Tonight, I want God to bless you. I'm not going to go into any more detail because it will take from the essence of this message, which is to show you how we are to live day by day, how that the Christ wants to become a part of us and then become a part of our living, a part of the expression of who we are on this earth, to give us the wisdom by which he overcame the world and show us how we also can do it. Because I'm telling you, you're not going to learn that on your own. You're not going to work out how to overcome this world. You'll never do it. But he's already done it. So he knows everything about how to overcome this world. So as we sit together, as we fellowship together, as you and God just fellowship together, he's going to tell you, every decision you make will be made at that table with the Christ there. That's when you make your decision, when you hear what he has to say, and you begin to understand the wisdom of the universe has been shared with you. May God bless you tonight and encourage you. Amen.